As promised, one of our most exciting parts of today is the panel discussion. Can I leave the introduction of the panelists to our moderator, Charles Mock? Charles, please.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming back here. And actually, I have to tell you that we did, and we really have saved the best for last. And you will not, you will be thankful for yourself for staying until the end, because we have a great panel here from Hong Kong, as well as from of course from ICANN, to share and discuss with you a number of issues, whatever is on their mind regarding our topic for the panel, which is ICANN and Internet Governance and Asia. In fact, I believe that the issues relating to internet governance is more and more becoming issues that affect our economic, our social, as well as our even political landscapes, all in all parts of the world, including Asia. And particularly in Asia, I think because of the diversity that we have in terms of all our government systems, as well as our cultural backgrounds and so on, it is a particularly interesting development. There are many, many more particularly interesting developments in this area relating to various internet governance related issues. So let me introduce to you our lineup of panelists today. First of all, sitting next to me, Mr. Jeremy Godfrey. He is the Government Chief Information Officer of the Hong Kong's Special Administrative Region government. Welcome, Jeremy. And next to Jeremy is Safi Hoheya, who is, as I introduced this morning, the Manager of Regional Relationship Australia-Asia Pacific for ICANN. Sitting next to Safi is Edmund, who's been asking questions all morning and, already. Edmund, as many of you here know, he is wearing three hats today, but I'll only tell you about two for this particular session, which are the CEO of Dark Asia Organization, which is a registry located in Hong Kong, and also the councillor, a councillor of GNSO Council of ICANN. And finally, but not least, Mr. Dennis Chai. He is the Assistant Secretary General of the Hong Kong International Arbitration Center. Dennis, welcome. So I think let us kick off this particular panel by giving a chance for each of our panelists. And I might start with Jeremy first and give you a chance to share with us for a few minutes about what you see are the main issues surrounding the issues that we generally talk about as internet governance, particularly in the Hong Kong context. I know that actually we had a discussion about this a few days ago, and maybe you can share with us your view, as well as maybe from the perspective of a government in Hong Kong, what are the things that you would be most interested about, and what are the biggest challenges that you might be facing? And then we might, I might want to try to give our Asian or local panelists to start first, and then for Safi to give a response after that. So after Jeremy, maybe Edmund and Dennis, and then come back to Safi, if that's okay. Okay, Jeremy, please.
Yeah, I'm going to speak for a very few minutes. I should confess I'm a bit of a novice when it comes to when it comes to internet governance. I've been in my job in the government about a year and a quarter. I'm the Hong Kong government representative on the GAC, but I haven't yet been able to attend any of the meetings. So I'd say that everything I know about internet governance I've learned from Charles and Edmund and Pinder. So they have to take full responsibility for any weaknesses and in any of my insights. I'd say that clearly the issue of internationalized domain names is a very important issue for Asia. And as you were discussing, I think when we earlier in the week, we're also discussing about the question of the digital divide. And in some ways, of course, the two things are a bit linked together, because in Asia you have a large number of people who, for whom the English language and the Roman characters are not their first language. They may not be able to, so they use Asian scripts to read and write in. And so I think for them, being able to access the internet right up to the top-level domain level in their own language is an important piece of not only making it a valuable economic tool, but also providing access to people in Asia. So I think that's really one of the big issues. I've heard a lot of people talk to me about IPv6, and I have to say I don't yet have a view on whether this is something that is if we just sort of don't panic about it, it will happen. Or whether there's a need for governments to push it. I'd be kind of interested to learn more about people's views on that. Those are, I think, a couple of the issues. I mean, I think I'll wait and see how the panel discussion evolves before saying much more.
Emin?
Sure. First of all, thank you, Charles, for introducing myself. Yes, I do wear a few hats as I sit here. And in terms of internet governance, and the issues that are discussed today is very relevant to what I do. .Asia itself is a new generic top-level domain. It's a new GTLD. We were introduced into the domain system just a couple of years ago. And IDNs, internationalized domain names, is definitely one of the areas that I'm very interested about. Personally, I self-proclaim as one of the pioneers of IDN, having working on it for the last about 10 years, hoping to actually see it happen, and also to see it happen for .Asia, what it means by that, seeing things like .Yazhou or .Asia being a reality for Asians around the world. So I, you know, these are a couple of areas that I'm that makes it relevant for the discussion today for me. And wearing a slightly different hat, which is Internet Society of Hong Kong. Taking on sort of a user perspective is really a completely separate, a different side of the argument. I'm also, you know, on that front, very interested in what types of things ICANN should be or should not be involved with, and how users are being included in those discussions. Sitting here as a registry and sitting in ICANN meetings as a registry, it's easy for myself and my organization, my company, to justify my presence at the meetings. But for the regular user, it's very difficult to justify a trip to sometimes very exotic places to attend meetings and participate. So in the user point of view, there's definitely a lot that ICANN still needs to do in terms of engaging and making it relevant. This is one of the points I made earlier on, is that a lot of people, first impression is that ICANN is doing something that's not quite relevant. They're doing something in a black box, and I really don't care. And that's sort of the usual first impression. But in fact, it is something that affects a lot of people. Some of the policies could affect, things like phishing, could affect things like spam. I'm not saying that definitely ICANN needs to deal with these things in a certain way, but it could have implications to these things. So on wearing my hat as Internet Society Hong Kong, on a user perspective, and getting users to participate in this whole process, you know, that also is part of what I'd like to bring to the discussion.
Dennis, please.
Yes, thanks, Charles. And actually, I was discussing the definition of the internet governance with a few of my colleagues, and find that it's a very broad and complicated issues. And I'm here. I was just thinking about how can I contribute to this topic, and because maybe firstly I can talk about who we are and who are we? And actually, we are the domain name dispute resolution service provider. We are handling UDRP cases and also handling several domain name dispute concerning the CCTLDs, such as .cn, .hk, and .pw, and etc. So we started the business since many years ago. I think it was since, as I remember, was correct, and we was firstly appointed by the .hk in 2001 to start it, to handle the .hk domain name dispute, and later on we was authorized by ICANN to handle the generic top level domain dispute, and later on we further expand our business to .cn and .pw, and it has been proved that the UDRP or the UDRP-based domain name dispute resolution process is very successful and quick and efficient and cost-effective way to resolve domain name dispute. What we are doing is to contribute to the whole to building the harmony society in cyberspace. So, and actually, it's a very good way to resolve domain name dispute. And but I was heard I learned from this morning that there will be a lot of new GDLD coming, such as the IBM and so forth. I think it's pretty good. But I was just thinking and come to a very critical issue. Would the current UDRP can apply to the new GDLD? Would any changes should made to the UDRP to cater for the new GDLDs? And I was maybe I can take a very simple example, like if a domain name was registered as the hp.ibm, can HP initiate the UDRP proceeding to get back their name, HP.IBM? Under the current UDRP proceedings, the claimant have to establish its right to the domain name. And that's that's quite interesting, because it was very difficult for HP to establish that it has right to the HP.IBM, because in currently, the UDRP panelists were making the decision on the case, and they will never look into the suffix, such as the .com. They only take into consideration of the main part of the domain name, such as IBM.com. They will not they will not consider the IBM is confusingly or not. So they will just look at the complainant to see the complainant, whether the complainant has a legitimate right to the main part of the domain name. If HP.IBM is registered, can HP prove that I have a right to the name, or can the panelist just to ignore the .IBM just to consider HP the key part? So I think it's a very interesting issue to how we can efficiently launch the new GDLDs program, and I think a lot of issues we should take into consideration. I think that's my gut feeling on this very broad topic, and maybe pass back to Charles.
Yeah, Harvey, Safi, you want to give us some feedback from your perspective about what our panelists just mentioned?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me to be part of the panel. I would have rather, no offense to Doug, but you know, he could be sitting here, but you know, I'll take this as the regional manager for for ICANN in the Australia Pacific Islands. There's been a lot of interaction that we do in our team to try and outreach to the various constituencies and stakeholders that are involved in ICANN or are new to ICANN. Now, as we look at the internet governance, ICANN became a focal point for the internet governance debate, which was, it's appreciated that, it came up. That's why we are now having to discuss about internet governance. Janice has said, it's really broad what internet governance is. And one of the themes there is that managing critical internet resources, which again, in the next internet governance forum in Egypt in November, these are one of the themes that keeps coming up about the management of the critical internet resources. And you've heard today, all of today, people are just talking about ICANN, the presenters from ICANN, on the narrow remit of what ICANN responsibilities are and what are the broader issues out there that people want to talk about in ICANN, under the internet. There's issues about security, access and diversity that also that developing countries have brought up as issues that we should be discussing in internet governance. I just wanted to bring up the theme about this year's internet governance in Egypt is about creating opportunities for all. Now, when we look at the IDN's space, it's really, and the new GTLD space, the creation of this and the introductions of these new IDNs, it's really creating opportunities for the masses and the new internet users that are going to come up from Asia. Also, in the IPv4, IPv6 transition, ICANN has been really involved with the NRO and the RIRs in terms of trying to promote the uptake of IPv6. And these kind of forums are also happening in the ICANN landscape. In terms of participation of the end users, I wanted to touch on what Edmund said, that in ICANN we've invested a lot in terms of remote participation. These sessions right now are being put out there for the masses to access the website and follow these meetings remotely. So ICANN also, in its three meetings, have been doing that to involve the people globally to come in and participate in ICANN. One of the recent initiatives that ICANN has done is introducing fellowships so that developing countries, people from developing countries and those who are interested in doing ICANN work can come in through and join ICANN in a physical meeting through these fellowships. And of course, we have a public participation website in ICANN that people can also participate in that. In my line of work, in our team, we have a team of seven regional relations that we go out and meet different constituencies and stakeholders to talk about ICANN and also the factual information about ICANN, because when internet governance came up, there was a lot of misinformation out there about what ICANN's mandates are, what ICANN's missions were. So this kind of information sharing is really important as we move forward.
Okay, thank you. Now, I want to get a little bit more specific now. I'm going to ask a question, and hopefully all of you can give me a very straightforward answer. Now, there are many internet governance issues around us, right? And typically, I give you a few examples, even though this is not a multiple-choice question. Things like content control, child protection, copyright, digital inclusion, IPv6 deployment, security, privacy, users' right, to name a few. Now, in your mind, what is the single most pressing issue on your mind among this list or other other internet governance related issues on your mind? And then after you say the one that you think is the top or most pressing or whatever or the most interested thing to you, what about what do you think is the role of ICANN for that particular issue? Obviously, many of these issues may be overlapping in one way or another. And at the same time, also, because today our topic is also the IDN and GTLD, new GTLD program. And the issues that I mentioned, actually, I'll have to say that probably have to do with probably have a lot to be impacted by the new GTLD program and IDN as well. So obviously that might have some implications on the role of ICANN. And how do you see that? Now, who wants to give it a shot first?
Okay, I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
But I won't give you a straight answer. I think I'll start off by saying I think many of the things you talked about, they're not actually just, they're not internet governance issues. They're issues which are much wider than internet governance, but which internet governance affects. So things like the digital divide. I mean, if you look at it from a global perspective, is it 1 billion users? I think Stephen Lau told me that at one point people said, where are we going to get the next 1 billion? And then they'd been roundly shot down, said that's the wrong question. The question is, where are we going to get the last 1 billion? How are we going to get the last 1 billion people onto the internet? And so this is a huge and very important issue in terms of, and probably more than anything else, can help drive well-being around the world. And but then internet governance plays an important part in that, but by no means the only part in it. And then ICANN plays a role within internet governance. It's not the only. So then you have to kind of ask yourself, in some ways, I think many of these issues are ones which you wouldn't necessarily say ICANN should take responsibility for, whether it's the digital divide or child protection or anti-spam or anti-phishing, or even climate change, which you didn't talk about. Mm. You know you can certainly think that almost many of the decisions taken by ICANN could have an impact on these. On these wider issues. So I think it's more a question of kind of saying, in a way, maybe it's like thinking of it in terms like corporate social responsibility. ICANN has a fairly clearly defined role in doing in managing certain types of internet resources. The implications of how it does it are much wider, and it should certainly make a contribution or maximise the contribution it makes to those issues in playing out its assigned role. So that's kind of my non-answer to your question.
Okay. I wonder how other panelists might want to add to that. Either that Jeremy has given us a very all-rounded answer, but at the same time, do you have something that's particularly important in your mind, Edmund? Yeah, if you like.
In terms of internet governance, this very difficult question. After you asked it, I was trying to figure out what I want to answer and what people want to hear. but I decided to say what I want to say. The one issue that's closest to my heart right now about internet governance is no doubt internet safety issue. And what I mean about that is the concept of internet safety, where people lump content filtering into it. And my concern for that is sort of, and I can speak, mission creep about this internet safety and making sure and looking into content filtering. And definitely that, I do believe that is part of internet governance. Right now, I mean, that includes things that are sort of issues of fake information on the internet, and also malicious information on the internet, as well as information that certain people around the world feel is unsafe for certain groups of people. For example, children. Quite straightforwardly, like porn information, like information about politically sensitive issues. How we deal with it, that is definitely the closest to my heart. However, in terms of ICANN, I do not believe that ICANN needs to be part of it, but what I think is relevant in that area about ICANN is that having participated at ICANN for last 10 years, I believe that the process of which, I know there's still a lot of people that has a lot of tax on ICANN being not transparent and open enough, but at least if we can have a process that this ICANN experiment is trying to do for local legislation or local discussion about internet governance, I think we would be in a better place than we could be. And so instead of it being something that I can, within the ICANN scope, I think the ICANN model itself, the bottom-up approach, the inclusion of constituency and the proactive reaching out to different constituencies and different stakeholders is a good approach, and it is an approach that is important when we talk about internet governance in Asia and in our local jurisdictions. But if I may add one point in terms of what is closest to my heart for ICANN and within ICANN scope and about internet governance, that's definitely IDNs and IDN TLDs, not only IDN CCTLDs, but also IDN GTLDs, because people expect that to happen. And I think Pinder mentioned earlier, I think it's very true. If ICANN doesn't get this right and doesn't get this right quickly, quick enough, then the relevance of ICANN itself in Asia could be jeopardized.
I'd like to just add on from there. ICANN is about a single, stable, secure, and interoperable internet. And that's what, as staff, we try to preach that when we go to do meetings. So, you know, when you asked for what was your one-word answer, I think security plays a big role. And in ICANN's Stability and Security Advisory Committee, they're working with a lot of partners and seeing that, you know, how they can sign the route, the NSSEC. And, you know, with the introduction of the IDNs and the new GTLD, security will still play a big role in how we ensure that these things are secure and that people can trust the internet.
Dennis, you have something to
add? As to what is the most important issue in terms of the internet government, my perception is that it's also the cyber squatting to be one of the key issues. Because cyber squatting relates to the domain name registration. If we can have a good control on the domain name registration, and we can have a much more better way to protect the some right of the certain stakeholders, and I'm seeing that a lot of cyber crime or a dispute in relation to domain name are derived from the bad faith domain name registration. Taking for example, I was seeing the case like that Bank of China, .com. They didn't register the Bank of the China. They registered bankofchina.com, and they sending fake email to the world. You just look at the service; it's very like the Bank of China. They use the zero to replace the O. So, if we have a better control of the domain name registration, to some extent, it may of a very it would be very helpful to protect the right of the stakeholders of our community. And for this point, the ICANN Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy has been very helpful in this context. And for the next step is, as I mentioned before, is to think about how we can improve the UDRP to cater for the new GTLD, because I look at the WIPO's website. They make a lot of recommendation on how to improve the UDRP, such as we using the green UDRP and so forth, and which is totally based on the it's a web-based process, and a lot of revamps or suggestions has been raised, and that is of a very very helpful to improve the policy. So, in general, I should say that the next step is to think about how to improve the current mechanism the ICANN policies. So that's my feeling on.
Thank
on
you.
This one.
I want to actually give a bit more time for our audience to share your views and to ask your questions that you have in your mind. So maybe you can start thinking about that and get lined up in the middle if you have something to say. But before that, and you can start lining up if you want, if you have things that you want to talk about. But before that, I actually also want to make sure I remember one thing. You received a feedback form this morning in the package that you have as you come in. And I want to make sure that you make some time, maybe during this session, to fill it out. And make sure you drop it out when you leave, because it is going to be very useful and helpful for us to evaluate the meeting and so on. So anyone think of something you want to start saying? Oh, okay.
This is something different. My name is Adrian Kinderis. Dennis, the point you brought up earlier about squatting or HP and IBM, the example you provided in your opening monologue. I think that's an interesting concept, and I'd like to hear some other thoughts from the panel. Is you mentioned that HP.IBM, you know, may be a mechanism. There may be something that HP may want to pursue IBM in regards to that. It's funny that at the moment we don't go to the third level. For example, I could register, or Google could register, HP.Google.com. Mm-hmm. Within by themselves. They just make that as a third level domain within their second level domain at .com. Mm-hmm. And HP can't go after them there, mm-hmm. or don't, or choose not to. So now when we move that debate up one level, is it still relevant? And I'd like to get some thoughts there from the panel, if you have any. That, I guess what I'm asking is, why is it any different that if Google does HP.com, HP.Google.com, is that any different to HP.Google if Google wanted to do that? Is it any different in your eyes?
Basically, to some extent, it's just basically, under the current policy, the UDRP, the panelists will just look into the substantial part of the domain name.
The second level.
Yeah, the second level, and just neglect the .com and .IBM, maybe, the second level. And to think about what is the, whether the claimant, the complainant has the legitimate right to the substantial part of the domain name. If yes, it can pass the first criteria. And for what's the difference between that? If, take for example, my example raised that HP.IBM is you can see there is an association of two trademarks. If the panel decide, I allow the transfer, the name can be transferred back to HP because the complainant, the HP, satisfy all the requirement under the UDRP. And if it's a .IBM domain, can IBM initiate another UDRP proceeding to get back the .IBM domain because it's associated with their trademark? So that's the reason why I raised this
example.
Yes,
I understand the quandary, yeah. Because one is IBM holding one and the other is HP.
Right.
I understand what you're saying. So maybe my... Edmund, do you?
Yeah.
I knew you were going to come up with these trick questions. It's an interesting question. I mean, I guess if I were Dennis, and I would say right now the UDRP proceedings doesn't cover the third level. I'm sorry, and that's the reason why. But in terms, it's a very interesting question. But you mentioned Google, but also, you know, if you look at things like actually, I don't know how many people know these type of products are out there. For example, like .eu.com or .us.com or .hk.com, you can actually register anything .hk.com with a particular company. And that currently is not within, at least I haven't heard ICANN say that this would be within their mandate. And if we ever get there, I guess you and I at the GNSO would have a very fun discussion about that too. So it is itself, in terms of third level, is in itself a very tricky question. Whether I can should, you know, enlarge its scope to there is really a tough question. I don't think we're prepared to answer here. But I guess coming back to the issue that Dennis pointed out, when brands start to become TLDs, it then falls into the UDRP realm of things. It then falls into the ICANN realm of things, and it forces us to take a look at it. Because right now, nobody is forced to look at HP.Google. Actually, let's see if it works. No, I mean... And if there is that case, I mean, I don't. And if there is a complaint, I'm actually interested to know if there is actually somebody filing a complaint saying, let's say I have a small company ABC, and Google is using abc.google.com and doing something very similar that I do. Mm-hmm. Would you take that as a case and studying it, utilizing some sort of a UDRP mechanism? Do you think you would?
Of course, when we accepting UDRP case, we just look at whether the complaint is in administrative compliance with the UDRP. We do not have the jurisdiction to make a decision on whether the complaint is good or bad. We just look into the formatting and once it is in compliance of the administrative requirement, and then we will process further and let. Leave the matter to the panelists to decide, and so.
If I may, Ben, just to pick up a point there, for me it comes down. I think that the basis of the judgment comes down to ownership, and I'll elaborate. VeriSign gives out a .com name, a domain name at the second level, and gives a license or in the case of .com, ownership of that domain name. And so someone can infringe at the second level because they're taking ownership of someone that is rightfully theirs. We don't acknowledge that at the third level. However, if you get rid of .com and now you take ownership at the top level, as in, you say, Google registers .google, therefore they're not giving out the name to anybody else. They're using it for their own purposes. So are they actually infringing at the second level? And therefore in the jurisdiction of UDRP? That's I guess, the nexus of what I'm trying to reach and the quandary. But thank you for your feedback. That's great. Did you add something?
I was going to just make a comment, actually. Looking at this from the kind of user perspective, clearly Coca-Cola.eu or Coca-Cola.eu.com are both as likely to confuse and mislead an end user as... If they're not owned by Coca-Cola themselves. So I think from a policy perspective, you'd want there to be some mechanism by which that misuse could be dealt with. Now, of course, ICANN's mechanisms and rules are only one of the legal mechanisms available. There's all sorts of issues in general, trademark law and passing off, and if it's being used for fraudulent purposes, that's against, you know, the Theft Act or whatever it is. So, I mean, it's clearly a matter for the kind of internet community to sort out. I mean, it's clearly felt that the general availability of law wasn't sufficient in dealing with the Coca-Cola.com being, or C0Cola.com. It's clearly... the community's decided that the general laws are not sufficient, and it was worthwhile putting some rules into the ICANN mechanism. So, I mean, I guess the community will need to decide whether or not it hasn't yet addressed the question about whether it should address it for Coca-Cola.eu.com, and no doubt, and it'll need to address the same question when it comes to new TLDs. I mean, the kind of the logic looks fairly clear. But of course, the decision-making process is maybe not quite so obvious.
Yeah, it's too bad that the owner of HK.com was here, but he's not in the room anymore now. Otherwise, he could have given you some of his perspective, because he's been running it for more than 10 years. Now, Ms. Wang, thank you.
As we all know, the GISO is experiencing reshuffle. So I'd like to get some opinion from the panel about the IDN constitution, because in June, there's a discussion about to build up an IDN constitution to solve the IDN-related question or issues more efficiently. So could you please give me some opinions with regards to this?
Is it IDN constitution?
Yes.
Constituency.
Constituency.
I don't know, Doug, maybe you want to take
You might want to call upon
one of the experts, yeah.
Well, I'll make a short statement about it. I think the GNSO needs to take IDN seriously, and I think I try very hard at the GNSO to take on different issues about IDNs. In terms of the IDN constituency, I think there are more other types of technical complications. I think Adrian wants to speak. I don't know whether Liz or Marika or Doug wants to say anything about it.
If I may just put on my GNSO councillor hat for a moment.
Yes.
My fear is that on the slides we saw earlier about the new structure, my fear is that by having these different constituencies, firstly, I would look to see where you can be represented within the current framework. And if and only if you're not being represented, then I see the need for a constituency. I would ask, where does the IDN community feel they're not being represented in the current structure? And where won't that serve them well? There is a registry constituency where if I was putting forward an IDN TLD application and I was successful within that application, I would fit underneath that constituency. I can also sit on business constituency and non-commercial, if that was where I wanted to go, on the other side, and the non-contracted parties within ICANN. So my opinion, if you're asking, as a councillor, is that I don't believe we necessarily need an IDN constituency. I think we need IDNs, absolutely, and that is not negotiable. But whether you need an actual independent constituency, and we're going to see the splintering of these small constituencies, I don't think that's healthy for the framework that we have. I hope that helps answer the question. Maybe not favourably.
But I think it could not solve the IDN-related questions more efficiently, because the registry is just more focused on the registry-related questions. IDN is new, and also we have a lot of questions with regards to this. I think we definitely need an independent constituency to solve for long term. Also, we need it.
Yeah. If I may, without getting into a dialogue, I'm sorry, but. I just think that, yes, you're right, though there is a group of people, but that's why Edmund is putting forward a working group to discuss these between the CCNSO and the GNSO to discuss IDN-related issues. So I think there are plenty of forums, working group related, that you can have your voice heard. But I certainly hear what you're saying, and I'm happy to be swayed either way.
Liz may want to add.
Liz coming to the rescue.
Yeah.
Not entirely. It's Liz Gaster. It is a big discussion. One thing I wanted to just clarify for everyone is that there are four new constituency petitions pending right now. The IDN constituency is one of the four. We have a city TLD constituency, a consumer constituency, and also a cyber safety constituency, all of which have submitted applications to the board to be recognized as new constituencies. And I believe that it's the August board meeting where the decision will be made in terms of whether those new constituencies will be granted or not. And if you'd like more information, I'd be happy to put you in touch with the right person, but I can't at least give you that much information. Okay, sure.
Doug, you want to?
No.
Okay, you and I, okay.
First thing, I'd like to give my opinion on the hp.google.com case. I think if we use a paper publication analogy, that would be on a sheet of paper, there is a blatantly large Google logo and they're mentioning HP somewhere. So if there is a lawsuit, it will be a defamation case instead of a copyright infringement case. And Now, I'd like to raise a question, a totally unrelated question on internet governance. What are your views on the recent Green Dam movement proposed by the Chinese government? Thank you.
Okay. Well, who would want to give a first shot at that? Not you.
Maybe Charles, you're probably the best one to answer that.
Well, I didn't plan on answering questions, but I'll just be brief. I think it was in many ways a misguided move by the government, and I think they corrected it quickly, at least for the time being. But I don't want to just drill into the issue as if this is a China-only issue. But in fact, I do see that there is a threat of maybe misunderstanding, maybe governments really feeling that internet is a threat, when of course I don't think they should feel that way. But many governments are actually looking at the internet and finding out that there are many things that they say they thought that things are not being within their control, out of control, and then they have tried. And it is not just a China issue. It happens in many other countries around the world in different extent at the same time. So I think that's why, while we can certainly look at the Green Dam issue by itself, and we can spend hours talking about it, but I just want to throw out the perspective that it is actually a global phenomena that many countries are trying to do things in different ways to control or to harmonize the internet, when in fact they should probably be more embracive about it. Embracing about it and try to really focus on the good side of the internet and try to influence it in more positive ways. But it is also, I think, why a forum like this is important, that you get different people together, multi-stakeholders, they share their views, and then you try to influence governments, your own government, in different ways, and try to get the people, the users, more educated at the same time that they know what their own rights are, which is very important. And I think even in China, in particular this case, I think we couldn't have, or the government couldn't have reversed their verdict, not unless as we saw the kind of reaction from the internet users within China, and that has proven to be, I think, an important tipping point for the government to reverse its decision, in my mind. And I think that, to me, would be a lesson to learn. Anything to add, any of you?
Not really, except that what I've learned from an ICANN exposure is that I think this may be out of scope of what we're discussing today. But unless you want to apply for a .dam or a .greendam or .green.
.dam. And then all the different colors. Yes, thank you. Doug?
Thank you. Very enjoyable to be on this side of the stage. So just to turn around, a question I think Pindar started us out on this morning, which was, you know, Asia is the center of the most rapid growth of internet use, you know, a technology center for the world. Edmund's comment that ICANN can sometimes seem inaccessible or not relevant in some cases to individual internet users. And so in this internet governance discussion and thinking about Asia, what can ICANN do, or what is the better way to encourage engagement of people from Asia? Either what can people in Hong Kong and Asia do? What could ICANN do to encourage that?
Yeah, I was almost going to ask that question when Liz and Marika were talking, but it's even better to come from ICANN itself. So any comments from our panelists on that particular question? Because in my mind, let me throw out a couple of observations that I have first. Started getting me talking. But it's really difficult in this part of the world for many people who are, first of all, possibly the number of people, even though we have a large number of internet users, But a lot of them are not really exposed to the government side of the issues. And to them, it's just a matter of whether or not I get a fast broadband and whether or not I get the domain or the email that I need. And seldom do they really think of the governing issue and realize that they're actually a part of it, number one. And second, in terms of the culture, I think many of us are not really used to the bottom-up approach. And we're not really as used to, you know, oh, really, I can go over there and really get my views heard or enter into these forums and become part of the working groups and so on. What it also means is that my boss or my organization that I work in may not see it as important and allow me the time and to spend, even if I personally have become interested, even if I get past the first hurdle. How do I get past the other hurdle, which is my organization needs to agree that this is important. And I think this is true for academic, for commercial organization, even governments. So how do we? I don't have the answer, but that's exactly the observation that I see from Asia. Why we seem to be lacking in this area. Now,
I don't think I have all the solutions, but events like this is very useful. And as I mentioned earlier, we need to create a little bit more relevance. You know, make the issues simpler to create sort of relevance. There are two things I found that has been useful to try to get people to participate in this region. No disrespect, but anything that can make them money. You know, people would become interested when we talk about domain names. You know, everything is, you know, very boring, except did you know you can speculate on domain names and get millions of dollars? Now people are listening. Not saying that, you know, that's the
message
only
of the day, right? Okay.
I mean, did you know that people invest in domain names and can sit in their home and make millions of dollars? That's a good way to get people to understand. But I think what is important is to see that it is relevant for them. You know, there are economic relevance. That's one part. The other part that I've found recently that is useful to get people to start participating is that, did you know that your competitor can create a policy against you if you don't participate? You know, it's sort of like a threat. But if you don't participate, your competitor is participating, they could be bringing into the process things that are much more, you know, a better environment for them to thrive rather than you. I know neither of them are actually good ways to get people to participate, but it gets people listening. But I think things like today would be useful.
So Edmund and I, we are inviting ICANN to come back here more often.
Yeah.
Okay. Right? I think Jeremy would echo that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
let me also try and give a kind of almost a personal perspective about why maybe I haven't been more personally involved in internet governance. I think, actually, ICANN has evolved very, very quickly. The community has evolved very, very quickly. And it's the original participants were a group of people who were incredibly knowledgeable, incredibly enthusiastic, fantastic pioneers to whom the world owes a huge debt of gratitude. And I think most people coming later to the party actually look at ICANN and they think, yeah, these guys are doing a great job, by and large. We don't really understand what it is they do, but we're really pleased that they're doing it and let them get on and do it. I think when you actually then look at the processes of ICANN, so, you know, if I look at, say, the GAC, which is the process I'm involved in, it's to get involved in it. You know, you see that there are some individuals on the GAC who basically are just personally very interested. It's not, you know, if you had to predict which governments would be being most active in the GAC without knowing, you would never guess. Because it's actually all driven, seems to be driven as much, as I say, by the personal enthusiasm of some individuals. And if you think about, people sometimes use the analogy of the internet being a city. You know, and you know, when we've been talking about cyber safety, we say it's a city with, you know, great museums and great shops and great places to hang out with your friends, and it's also got some rather less salubrious places that you need to know how to avoid. And like any city, there's a kind of town council as well. And I think that in terms of engaging with people who have less time, less knowledge, maybe a bit less enthusiasm, the issues need to actually be boiled down into simpler issues that people can respond to with less time. Now, I'm not for one moment going to hold up the Hong Kong government as a paragon of how you do public consultation. But you know, there's maybe something ICANN can learn from the way governments consult. So that I think that does involve reaching out more and trying to distill the issues more before you engage the stakeholders. And at the moment, it's kind of, you know, there's a fantastic, brilliant debate that goes on, but you're kind of, it's like turning on a show in the middle when you've missed the first 20 episodes, and you know, you just think, oh, I'm never going to catch up with what's been going on. So I don't know whether the answer is for ICANN actually to maybe increase the staffers so that the kind of the issues, I mean, I know the lady was talking about do you need an IDN constituency? And I guess that's partly driven out of frustration about how long it's taken for the IDN issues to be resolved. You know, maybe the kind of if the staff work in distilling down the issues and the key questions and the pros and cons could be done, then the amount of effort involved for people to express opinions would actually be lower. So I think if you can lower that barrier, and then, of course, as Edmund says, you know, give people opportunities other than flying halfway around the world for a week in a place that their boss is never going to believe is really a business trip. You know, come out, do these one-day sessions around the world, find other ways of people communicating. I think that can really help.
Thank you all very much for these comments.
Johnny? Yes. We will take this probably as the final question because we do really want to keep up with our time limit. So, Johnny, please.
He's lucky to have a last question. I want to ask, the GTLD program is good because you can actually add more category to the internet, but I think that the TLD itself is also function as the category functions. If there is too many GTLDs, then is there many functions that of the categorizing the internet may be loose because many of them may be become more and more confusing? And is there any way to ICANN to regulate the establishment of the GTLD? Because I think that if there's something like .com and somebody want to set .company, and that may be somewhat confusion.
Okay, confusion in terms of both the number, because if there are a big number of GTLDs, then it gets confusing, and also if they imply similar things, then it also gets confusing as well.
And I worry about the trend, there's many, because the amount itself is already can lead to great confusion.
Okay, let's have our panelists' view on that. I think this is a question that probably any of you would have some views on it. Savi's official response from ICANN on
I think what I can say at the moment is that the GTLD process, or the introduction of the new GTLD process, has been a long, drawn process, and it's been going on for so many years now in ICANN. We've put out the draft applicant guidebook, and it has, you know, we discussed today the overarching issues, some of the stuff that Doug has touched on the confusion part, the demand, the economics. So I think that probably is enough to say right now whether to either repeat that or, I mean, we get your concerns.
Okay, I think it's possible.
Yeah.
And
Dennis?
Very brief. I would just want to point out that the CCTLD, the number of the CCTLD is over 240, and I think it's a quite large gap between the numbers of the GTLD and CCTLD. The question, the most important issue is how we, how I can classify those new GTLDs, and that's the critical point of how to avoid the confusion of the public. So that's my comment.
Yeah, I'll give a view. It's I wouldn't say it's particularly this is a matter for governments, but other than say that the Hong Kong government always thinks the market is the best way of solving any problem, and I think actually you'll almost find that will happen with new GTLDs. I'd certainly observe that .com has lost all semantic meaning. It doesn't actually tell anybody that it's a commercial organisation. My own personal email address, I registered a domain for it. It's named after the place where I come from in Ireland. And I registered curramount.com just because it sounded better than anything else. So .com sounds like a real internet address. My 6-year-old son thinks that if he wants to find anything on the internet, if he wants to find out how to make an animation of a dinosaur, he just has to type in www.howtoanimateadinosaur.com. So I think the kind of the semantic meaning has been, whatever the original plan was for categorization has been overtaken by the way people use the TLDs. So if someone registers .company, I doubt that anybody will actually be that interested in going to that domain because what it will show is that you're somehow a second-class citizen compared to someone with a .com domain. On the other hand, there are clearly going to be some new TLDs, particularly the internationalized ones, so .hongkong, .gongxi, whatever, which are going to be extremely useful. So I kind of think that we shouldn't worry too much about that proliferation. The market will just sort it out.
Okay. That's, thank you for all.
Edmund, any points to add?
Not really. I think Dennis' point is very very good and very important. And often when we talk about new GTLDs, we often forget that there are already 250 CCTLDs out there, and we're saying we're adding a few hundred new GTLDs. Is that going to create a lot of confusion? I mean, there are 250 CCTLDs today. Is there, that argument needs to be taken into consideration. And then, of course, what Jeremy mentioned in terms of IDNs, IDNs are very important. So if you take the about 250 CCTLDs, all of them have IDN versions of it, that will be about 500 to 1,000 TLDs by then, not counting GTLDs. So, when we think about a really, a lot of TLDs, we need to realize that there are already a lot, and there are going to be, there will be a lot more, and especially also to consider the CCTLD and the IDN part.
I think that's fine for all your reply, and I just raised a small concern because many of them may think that those problems may be greater problematic these days.
Mm. I think I just want to end the session with my last word. As the moderator, I get that privilege. And I actually, Johnny made a very good question. Is it going to cause more trouble, basically, if we do all these things? Well, in a way, I think the internet grew out of a lot of accidents and unintended moves and so on. I still remembered. I started using the internet in 1981 or 82, and at that time, I couldn't imagine that I could get my charlesmark.hk or charlesmark.com for $10, $20. I couldn't imagine that at that time. And now, it's so simple to all of us and so intuitive. Even TCP/IP was not intended probably to be used the way it is right now. So now I guess we're entering the time when we have close to, not quite, 2 billion internet users in the world. And then this morning we heard that Doug told us that we have 183 million domain names already in place. Now that's a huge number to me already. What would be the difference if that 183 million becomes 800 million? Is that going to be significantly more confusing than it is already with 183 million domain names around? Maybe, maybe not. And I just want to close it with something that I heard Doug say, I heard Doug say during the press briefing that we had during lunchtime. And he said it is very hard to plan innovation. And I think that's exactly what we're facing. I mean, we certainly want to make the best out of this as a planned introduction of something new. But at the same time, we are really entering into uncharted territory. And so I guess we just need to be a little bit bold and see where it takes us. And in the end, I think if the internet has been an experiment so far, it has proven to be successful, no matter how some people may have taken it with ill intentions and so on. But so far, I think human nature, the good side of it, have prevailed so far. So I guess I'll just be the optimist and hope and think that that will continue to be the case. So with that, thank you to all. Thanks to all of our panelists. And I also, on behalf of Internet Society Hong Kong, I just want to say thank you to all of you for staying to the end. And I want to now turn the time to Doug. I think you have a few final words to say, and then we'll turn the time back to our MC to end the session.
Thank you very much, Charles. Just, an opportunity to say some quick thank yous is really all I was looking for. First of all, to everyone who attended, especially those who stayed to the very end, thank you all very much for coming. I thought the comments and questions from the floor were all very good, very helpful. We'll definitely take those comments back with us. Secondly, sort of thank you to Hong Kong for welcoming and hosting this ICANN event. I think it's been very valuable for us to be here, so really appreciate that. I just thought maybe Charles, you'll have a chance to say this as well, but just to note that supporting organizations for this event, Asia Domain Name Dispute Resolution Center, COMPTIA, Hong Kong International Arbitration Center, Hong Kong ISP Association, Hong Kong Association of Interactive Marketing, and WTIA. Thanks to all of them. But maybe a round of applause would be appropriate. But even more strongly, definitely for the heavy lifting here at the end, to Charles Mock and the Internet Society of Hong Kong, thank you very much. I think it's easy when we attend these kind of events. I just sort of walked in this morning, walked up, and get to talk. There's a lot of work that goes into this, so really want to acknowledge the hard work of the Internet Society here.
Thank you.
Making that, I think, a really good event. I note also the presence of local Hong Kong government officials here, and I think that support is very, very positive. I want to just three more things, and then I'll be off. One is that, again, a reminder on the feedback forums. Love to hear what was positive about today, and also your criticisms and suggestions for next time for improvement, as well as on the issues of substance. So please provide that. We read everything that comes in on our website, every submission. So if you have comments, please make them. You're participating in the process. And last thing, and I think this suggestion actually came from Pendar, there's lots of ways to participate in ICANN, one of which is to do what Evan's doing, be a GNSO counselor. We really welcome your consideration of participation in ICANN. And another venue you might look at is the non-com group. We'd love to see more Asian participation at sort of policymaking levels, at board of director level, and encourage anyone, especially if you've stayed at the end, you've proven that you're interested in these issues. And so we really love your participation. Thank you very much.
And now we will have a group photo-taking session. May all the ICANN speakers come up to the stage to take the pictures.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You guys did a really nice job.
Doug, if we have a chance to go to dinner, and Jeremy is...
Thank you all for your attendance. May I remind you again to submit your feedback form at our registration desk or to any one of our ICANN staff. You can also visit ICANN.org for the topics that we have covered today, and also for subscriptions to the newsletters, and also for future ICANN meetings. Once again, thank you very much for coming to the conference. Have a good evening.